You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. This interview has been a long time coming because I probably first heard about this person, 10 or 15 years ago. And our paths just didn't manage to cross that many times, but I'm so glad to have her on the show today. Let me tell you about her. Dr. Nan Wise is a licensed psychotherapist, cognitive neuroscientist, certified sex therapist, board certified clinical hypnotherapist, and certified relationship specialist with 3 decades of experience. Driven by an intense desire to understand how the brain operates to create moods and behaviors, she returned to academia in 2009 to pursue a PhD in cognitive neuroscience at Rutgers Newark, where she completed her dissertation project, Genital Stimulation, Imagery and Orgasm in Women, and fMRI Analysis. Her research has attempted to address gaps in the scientific literature regarding the neural basis of human sexuality and has, as a result, garnered international attention. Dr. Wise has recently published 2 scientific papers, and the thing we're going to talk about today is her book, Why Good Sex Matters: Understand the Neuroscience of Pleasure for a Smarter, Happier, and More Purpose-Filled Life, which came out at the beginning of this year. Dr. Nan has been featured on the Today Show, is a regular columnist for Glamour, and is regularly interviewed in a lot of media. So welcome to the show, Dr. Nan Wise.
Thank you so much for having me, Tristan, and I have wanted to really connect with you for a very long time.
Same. I'm so glad technology is allowing us to do that.
Yay.
So I like to start out my interviews with a quiz that is about something slightly related to the topic at hand. So my question for you, your book is all about the brain and its role in sexual pleasure. If you could change one thing about your brain, what would it be?
Oh my goodness, exactly the fact that I'm so wired in the panic grief system that I'm a very anxious person. I've learned how to work with it. That's been my professional and personal journey. And I wonder what it would be like to be someone who just doesn't have the backdrop of anxiety that I do.
Yeah, a sort of a different baseline.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I first heard about you as the doctor, the sex therapist, who was putting people in fMRI machines, asking them to have orgasms, and then studying how their brains lit up while they did it. And as you might imagine, when I heard this from a friend who was a participant in your study, I thought, oh my God, this is groundbreaking. We need this research so, so much. And in some ways, it's like we finally got around to it. Like we've had that technology for a while, but I think people are, well, afraid to do research on sexuality, and especially this kind of research where people are masturbating or having sex. And I'm sure there's all sorts of ethical issues and all sorts of like boards you have to go to so that they'll let you do this. But I want to back up a bit because that's your headline that you put people in these machines and you study their brains. But I want to back up to your non-ambition. You were a sex therapist and you decided, hey, why don't I go back to school to get a PhD in neuroscience, which is just, oh my God, I'm in love with your brain just from reading your book. How did you decide to do that?
Well, you know, I always was interested in the brain. And when I was first in college, we had no way to study the working human brain other than maybe EEG, which is not very exciting. So that I went off, I couldn't do animal work. It bothered me too much. So I went off and became a clinical social worker. And I raised a family. I did a lot of trainings with, you know, getting different tools to work with my own anxiety. So I studied yoga and I did neurolinguistic programming and Ericksonian hypnotherapy. And I kind of put a lot of tools on my tool belt. And I was always incredibly, you know, interested in the brain, how the brain kind of produces our experience. And in particular, since I come from a long line of people with anxiety attacks, like your first rite of passage is not like a bar mitzvah or a confirmation, it's your first panic attack. I was always curious, like, you know, what makes brains do that? What happens? So when I actually was in an ASEC training, ASEC, the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, I know you know that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're
all my listeners do, right?
Oh.
No, but I mean, I don't know if they do too, so it's good to clarify.
So I met Beverly Whipple when I was doing my sex therapy training. And I'm sitting having her lunch with her in Virginia, and I'm talking to her about, you know, my clinical work. And she said, would you like to come down and give us some help in the lab? Because we're doing, you know, they had done the first brain study of orgasm like in 2004 with women who had spinal cord injuries. Because everybody said, oh, they can't feel orgasm. They can't have menstrual cramps. And actually, Beverly Whipple and Barry Komisarek figured out that, in fact, they could. They showed in the brain that women who had complete spinal cord injuries actually got sensations, not from the spinal cord, from their vaginas, but through the vagus nerve. And I do go on. But back to Beverly, she invited me. I go down to the fMRI lab. And because I was just always curious and they needed help, and I just ended up back in grad school. So my kids had all, you know, grown up and left. And it was really like the perfect time for me to become the world's oldest, teaching assistant. And then, you know, having to like, you know, grapple with things like learning statistics. I mean, like graduate level statistics. And I actually had the time of my life. I loved it. I loved being in school again. So that's how I got there. And what got me up every morning was the huge gaps in the literature, Tristan, about what we know about even the wiring of the genitals up to the brain. So basic things like, where do sensations from the genitals get processed in the brain had not been systematically studied. And this is basic science, and you're absolutely on target talking about how, you know, studying sex, it's just so difficult to get people to, number one, think that it's a good thing to study, mm-hmm. and to, you know, get funding for it. It's basically really impossible. We have so many hangups about sex. I don't think I have to tell you that. So, and to this day, you know, people walk past my book and they go, sex? Before the lockdown, when I was out there doing some book promoting, people like, you know, blush when they see the word sex on a book cover. So it's really been quite the journey. And I think what I really felt, it was so important to get out and talk openly about sex. And also, you know, when you think about the embodiment of pleasure and understanding how the brain produces such a powerful, a pleasurable experience, sex is the way to go.
Yes. No, you prove that in this book over and over. Okay, so let's start with the brain, Dr. Neuroscientist. I want to explain for listeners in simple terms the basement of the brain, the mid part of the brain, and the upper brain. Because we got to sort of have those definitions first to talk about then how you talk about this.
Perfect. So, you know, kind of to just keep it really simple, over evolution, there have been added bells and whistles to the brain. So if we look at the parts of the brain that are evolutionarily older, that we share certainly with all mammals and even some other animals, that's the basement of the brain. And that's where these seven core emotional instinct circuits live. And what drives me crazy now is that in my own field in psychology and in medicine, nobody addresses this. Nobody talks about these embodied emotional circuits that have actually been experimentally mapped out by Jak Panksepp, who is my idol, who's unfortunately passed away. He did this work. And because we have a lot of resistance on so many levels of feeling that animals have feelings and that, you know, we have this real great duty to them as a result of that, it gets ignored. So the basement brain is the older part of the brain where we share these wired in emotions. Some are defenses, like, you know, fear and rage and panic. Some are things that connect us up with each other, like care, which is powered by opioids, which is why relationships give us such a good sense of well-being. The lust system, the urge to merge, self-explanatory. And then the play system, which is wired into animals, because that's how young animals, mammals and people, young humans learn how to learn is through play. And the other system that we know about, as we call it the reward system, is powered by dopamine. And that actually is more about learning, which we can talk about, you know, in a little bit. So we have the basement of the brain, where those core emotions are. And then we have evolutionarily newer structures as you move up towards higher up in the brain, which is the machinery for learning, learning memory, and a lot of connection to these, what we call the limbic circuits, the emotional circuits that actually get input from the basement of the brain and help us. You know, emotions help us learn and remember. And that mid part of the brain, where I call it mid-level brain, is really where we kind of create all of the habits that we have, the connections, the associations that are learned. And that part is so much under the hood. For example, like we can have a reaction to something without consciously knowing why, because in an earlier time in our life, we had a bad experience. So we connect, for example, taking tests with being very anxious. And we can walk into a room and feel anxious without even realizing it's because it's like the room we take tests in. That's where our conditioning, our kind of learning, automatic learning, hangs out. That's the machinery for that. And then the higher level of the brain is the neocortex. It's the newer souped up covering of the brain that has all those neat nooks and crannies that we do all of our high level kind of planning, executive functions, all of that sort of thing. So like Panksepp said, we're very, very much the same as animals, as our four-legged friends at the bottom of the brain, and we're very different at the top of the brain. And a lot of this goes on, a lot of what happens in the brain goes on underneath our conscious awareness. So we really need to understand how the brain, body, mind works so that we can work it better.
Yeah, and I think your point, which was, you explained it really simply to someone who, if you said I had to read a book on neuroscience, would have freaked out. But the idea that like the basement of the brain is sort of this primal kind of lizard brain, and it has all of these really intense emotions kind of churning around. And the only way to really work with those is to kind of develop the other parts of the brain. So we can, in fact, sort of become aware and conscious of our emotions and work with them rather than resist them. Right. But it's about these different parts of the brain, which, you know, this is why I think the book is actually like super fascinating without the sex. It's like, oh, the movie was good without the sex. Because there's so much talk about sort of emotional regulation and kind of like how we react to things and how some of those reactions are really unconscious and how we can kind of change that. I actually sent the title of your book to my therapist. I was like, you have to read this. It's not really about sex.
Exactly. Thank you for getting that. Sex is the window into.
Yes. You're using sex as the kind of tour guide and as metaphor and also kind of literal. But there's so much that's just interesting here about brain, about emotions. I think I'm going to take a break there and let people chew on that because that's a lot to process. And when we come back, we're going to dig into what the brain has to do with sex. And it's even more important than you probably think it is. So stay with us. Hey everyone, it's Tristan. So 2020 has been a lot, and we could all benefit from less stress and more sleep in our lives. It's so important to take care of ourselves and invest in our well-being during these times of anxiety. That's why I'm excited to partner with Calm, the app designed to help you ease stress and get you the best sleep of your life. If I don't get a good night's sleep, I'm kind of useless the next day. When I sleep well, I feel better in every part of my life. Calm has a whole library of programs designed for healthy sleep, like soundscapes, guided meditations, and over 100 sleep stories, narrated by soothing voices like Stephen Fry, Kelly Rowland, and Laura Dern. And I don't know if you've heard, but Harry Styles just did a sleep story that everyone is talking about. I don't know about you, but I've been leaning heavily on Calm more than ever right now. During the day, it could be something as simple as a 5-minute meditation, and at night, there are so many options to set me up for a good sleep. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering a special limited time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's 40% off, unlimited access to Calm's entire library. Hundreds of hours of programming and new content is added every week. Get started today at calm.com/Tristan. That's calm.com/Tristan. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Dr. Nan Wise about her incredible book, Why Good Sex Matters: Understand the Neuroscience of Pleasure for a Smarter, Happier, and More Purpose-Filled Life. Okay, so we talked about some basics of the brain before the break. And, you know, people know our brains are really involved in sexuality. Sex educators have been saying this forever, like our largest sex organ is the brain, and it's all about the brain. But you, first of all, you've got evidence to back it up. You've got science to back it up. And you actually argue that our brains actually control sex and pleasure. So tell me about that.
Well, basically, the brains do control a lot of things. So the brain orchestrates pretty much everything from receiving sensations to sending out, you know, motor commands and all of that. But what I mean about when I say sex, actually the brain is the most important sex organ of all, is if you look at a paper I published, which was part of my original dissertation, is that I showed that when women were just imagining having their vaginas penetrated by a dildo, when they were just imagining that, their brains lit up like a Christmas tree. So the areas that are involved with sensation, with receiving and processing sensation, the areas that are implicated in when people's genital stimulation is received, where the place where the genitals plug in terms of sensations into the brain, as well as the reward areas, the pleasure areas, like, you know, the ones that are happen when we have what gets ignited by sex, drugs, and rock and roll, lit up when women were just thinking about having their vaginas pleasurably penetrated by a dildo, but not when they were imagining having a speculum inserted, which is a insertion into the vagina without the pleasurable overtones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we're saying is literally just using your mind to imagine stimuli is a very powerful way of activating the very same regions that would be stimulated if you were actually, you know, having sex.
Which is, you know, which is sort of like makes perfect sense in your brain, but you say it in a way and you really back it up. You know, I think people do think of sex as quite a physical experience, right? My body's turned on or it's not turned on. I have an erection. I don't have an erection. I'm lubricating. I'm not lubricating. I'm relaxed. I'm not relaxed. We think of it in very specific physical ways. And then we do sort of nod to the brain, but we don't necessarily think of it as like the central control station. And you bring up women. And so I do want to talk about this in terms of gender, because, you know, research shows that the people who are least satisfied by sex with their partners, especially intercourse, are straight women. So how does your research relate to what the media is calling the sort of so-called orgasm gap? But I actually prefer to think of it as a pleasure gap. The notion that men experience more pleasure from sex than women.
Well, that's a great question. I think everything we can approach in that way, we can look at it in terms of the biology, the psychology, the learning and culture and everything. First of all, there appear to be biological differences in women's brains when it comes to sex. And this may not be politically correct, but it happens to be scientific. Females, the female brain, and when I say the female brain, it's the sex XX and the brain developing under the, you know, the guidance of all of that, has fewer circuits for the sex hormones than the male brain. So women tend to have, I think, sex on the brain in general less than men. And remember, there's always individual differences. These things happen on a continuum. And actually, just to make things even more murky, but I think it's important that we know this, the brain and the body are sexed in two separate stages, at two separate points by two separate hormones, such that you can have a female brain and body, a male brain and body, or you can have a female brain with a male body, or a male brain with a female body. So just to understand there's a biological thing than that. Getting back to the pleasure gap, I think that exists for a number of reasons. I think culture discourages women from being as embodied sexually. They culture typically, with our typical gender roles, women are sex objects and men are success objects. So if you start off there, men are not discouraged from exploring sexuality. And a big part of learning comes through feeling comfortable enough, safe, number one, enough to explore our bodies. So in general, women feel more conflicted about simply going for sexual pleasure. We know that. And we know that because women tend to have a harder time, in general, finding their own orgasms or having their orgasms find them. And that's because the way that female sexuality works is it's really important that the female get more experience of growing up, the person who happens to have a vagina and a clitoris, whatever you want to call them, they need to connect those genitals to their brain enough so that those pathways, I call them the pleasure pathways, are laid down. Generally speaking, people born with penises play with them, and it's kind of easier to see when a penis is erect, and there's more cultural endorsement, I think, of male masturbation. So you can see that, you know, biopsychosocially, females aren't, and I won't ever say that women aren't as sexual as men. Women, I think, have incredible sexual potential beyond the pale. And that being said, women don't always find it easy to discover their pleasure pathways and to feel entitled to having the pleasure, where we assume men are entitled, where women don't necessarily feel that way.
But this book goes like sort of way beyond that, because you set a kind of a context, a kind of a backdrop for this book, wherein you say, you know, at a biological level, our nervous system is really dysregulated. And so the reason we are not having a lot of sex, have no desire for sex, have a lot of desire for sex, but can't feel satisfied by that sex, all of that has to do with dysregulated emotions, which you're one of the first people to put this out there to sort of a mass audience. And I mean, I think, you know, nowhere but now is this more apparent, because we know people are more depressed, people are more anxious, people are more medicated, people are in therapy and being diagnosed in such greater numbers than they used to be. And a term you use in the book a lot is anhedonia. So I want to define what that is, because essentially you're kind of trying to help people find their way out of and back from anhedonia.
Bingo, exactly. That's really the main focus. Anhedonia means without pleasure. And the difficulty experiencing satisfying pleasures is a symptom of things like stress, anxiety disorders, depression, other kinds of mental health challenges, very, very common. And it's a symptom of those disorders as well as contributing to those disorders. If you wake up in the morning and you can't find any pleasure in your day, that's going to make you more depressed, more anxious. It becomes a negative cycle. So the reason why I'm probably the first talking about this is that because our field, the field of psychology and also psychiatry, ignores, does not factor in these embodied emotional systems. And I think what you're going to see, Tristan, over the years is that this is going to become part of the how we look at mental wellness challenges as imbalances in these core systems. So, for example, one of the big reasons I think that we've been having what we call the pleasure crisis and also the sexual, the sex recession, which was going on before the coronavirus, is the way we are using our attention now. Attention is the seeking system. It's powered by dopamine. And it's necessary, it needs to work with the other emotional systems so that we can appropriately get our needs met. We can explore the world, we can avoid danger, we can seek healthy pleasures, all of that. And most people have their attention so divided now across devices. And what's happening is the firing of the seeking system. When you're sitting on, let's say you're on social media and you're getting likes and your dopamine's going, yay, yay, yay. That encodes a kind of wanting and craving, but it's not satisfying. So you see now more and more people, even when we were not on lockdown, in the room with each other and they're not paying attention to each other. They're on their phones or on their, you know, laptops, or they're watching something video. They're multitasking and they're not actually paying attention, number one, to their own bodies, and number two, to the people in the room. So that's flattening. When the seeking system is dysregulated like that, you don't have access to the affiliative systems like care and lust and playfulness. You're just kind of going to be stuck in that craving, wanting without being satisfied.
So reading this while still under quarantine, it's a little scary because it strikes me that so many people aren't having sex right now. And this is for a variety of reasons that existed before COVID, but also some of the reasons they're not having sex right now, it's out of their control, right? We're doing all this social distancing. So what is the lack of sex and a pandemic doing to our brains?
Well, it's a good question. I kind of like to expand the question from sex into pleasures about connecting. So what really I think is even more important than actually having physical sex is, are we paying good attention to each other? So that the fostering of good connection, and that really, even if we can't be in the room with somebody, if we can get on, for example, a Zoom call, and we're looking at somebody when we're talking to them and we're hearing them when they're talking to us, that's a whole lot more connection than people often do when they're in the room with other people.
Mm-hmm.
If we pay really good attention to each other, and although we don't have touch when we're virtual, we can really pay great attention. We can connect. We can go deep. We can listen. And listening is very important. One of the big issues, I think, for the millennials and the X-Gen, you know, going forward in particular, the young people spend all their time texting. Mm-hmm. And when we're texting, we're not even hearing each other's voice. Hearing voices is not a luxury. It's a necessity for us to register the kind of social, what they call the social engagement system, which can help really calm the nervous system and build feelings of connection. We're not getting that through texts. People are, even when they're in the room, they're plugged into their devices. So I think, first of all, we need to kind of get back to some basics and to be more at choice about how we kind of put our attention, because we get our attention hijacked all the time by people who make tons of money designing all sorts of interfaces across all sorts of things on the internet, which is basically to keep us glued and go deeper and deeper and deeper into the matrix there.
You know, as I read this book, I've been away from the internet for, I think it's 27 days. There's a whole complex set of reasons why I've been away from the internet, but listeners, you may have noticed I'm not on social media, haven't been checking my email. I've just started slowly kind of dipping my toe back into the water, but I will tell you that it's really lifted my mood tremendously. I've never done it for this long, you know, never taken a break for this long from the devices, from not looking at my phone. And so I sort of saw this point in action for me. This really resonated with where I am right now. It was like, she's totally right about this, because first of all, when you're not on the internet, you have so much more free time. It's shocking. I feel like 3 hours of my day have been like, have appeared out of nowhere. And it is simpler to sort of focus on one thing at a time, which I was surprised about, because I think of myself as a multitasker. Multitasking is obviously rewarded under capitalism. I think I do it really well, but I'm finding it so much more satisfying to not be like on my phone, on the internet, and doing something else all at the same time.
Well, I think that's the greatest commercial for how important being able to maintain kind of one focus at a time, at least some of the time. So, you know, even for people who don't want to give up on social media or the internet altogether, I think being more conscious consumers of this, where we give it a place in our lives, and we're able to focus better on what really counts. And what really counts are, you know, largely our relationships, our connections with other human beings and even our pets, or where our emotional systems experience satisfaction. And sex with somebody who likes you and who you like is a great form of social interaction with the potential of satisfaction.
Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about if all of this is going on, if all of us are having more difficulty accessing pleasure, accessing sex in our lives, can we change it? Dr. Nan says we can. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hi, all. It's pretty difficult to talk about things other than what's going on in our world right now. So delivering these ads to you are tricky for me, and I want to be transparent and honest about that. But also, these advertisers make it possible for us to do the show. And I believe in the ability of this show to help people. I don't consider pleasure something extra or frivolous or unnecessary right now. It is absolutely a part of resistance, justice, and freedom. One of our advertisers is Uber Lube. They make a great body-safe silicone lube with only two ingredients, silicone and vitamin E. No additives like parabens, preservatives, or petrochemicals. It's great for all kinds of sex play. Uber Lube adds a thin layer that leads to just the right amount of slip while still allowing for skin-on-skin sensations. If you need some lube, they're offering Sex Out Loud listeners a special offer. 10% off and free shipping when you use my code Tristan at uberlube.com. That's 10% off and free shipping. Just use the code Tristan at uberlube.com. Uber Lube lets you feel what you want to feel. You may have noticed the flowers are blooming, the grass is growing, and it's time to mow your lawn. Thanks to our sponsor, Manscaped, you can trim the hedges below the belt safely and efficiently. You know I don't like to beat around the bush, so I won't. Everyone could use a little trim of their pubic hair. Manscaped, the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming, is here to make sure your balls, people with balls, are smooth and smelling nice. After all, it's time for some spring and, let's face it, summer cleaning. I actually like to do grooming with a partner. I find it really sexy, but I've used razors before and I'm always afraid to nick their genitals. Scary. You have to use the right tools for the job. When I use the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, I know it's safe and it always does a great job. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the lawnmower, the waterproof cordless body trimmer, anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer, and the crop reviver to round out your manscaping routine. This third generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped advanced skin-safe technology. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. For a limited time, subscribers get two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. You should really try this out, and I've got a deal for you to get started. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Tristan at manscaped.com. That's right. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off with free shipping when you use the code Tristan. Your balls will thank you. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Dr. Nan Wise, a triple, quadruple something threat who is both a sex therapist and a neuroscientist. It's sort of like what the world needs now, right now, is Dr. Nan Wise. I want to read a quote from your book because I think it really encapsulates something that you demonstrate throughout the book. And you use case studies of clients. So there are real people in this book and their stories are very compelling. So the quote is, "When I talk to clients, I explain that by awakening our appetite for life via intentionally engaging our seeking and our play systems, such that we get turned on by life itself, by being present and exploring ourselves, each other, and the world with new eyes and new enthusiasm, our erotic potential expands." Okay, so I love this notion, again, of first of all, a very expansive view of what pleasure is, what sensual is. You're constantly sort of pushing people to redefine what sex is. But you argue that we have to get more turned on about other things in order to think about getting turned on about sex.
Exactly. What really happens for many of us. Now, for me, I happen to have been genetically predisposed to that overly active panic system. And if you have that on a regular basis, that definitely can drain the enthusiasm, flatten the seeking system, and, you know, and either end up with anhedonia, depression, anxiety, or all of the above. So I think what's happening is that we're flattening out our seeking systems because we're hijacked. We get hijacked with attention, and the signals from that seeking system, the dopamine, is not functioning properly. So I always tell people that if your defenses are activated, if you have panic going on, if you've got fear or rage going on, like in a sort of systemic way, you're going to feel a lot of difficulty accessing the sensations of play, lust, exploration, all of the stuff that happens when we are in kind of like a love affair with life. I have two little grandchildren, my two grandsons, all they do is play. Nobody has to tell them to play. They're so enthusiastic and exuberant. They're both, one is three, the other's one. They're having a love affair with life. And we have kind of gotten out of connection with our own bodies. We spend so much time indoors. We don't get enough natural light. And natural light, when sunlight goes to the back of the eye, right to the hypothalamus, which is the master of everything in the body, mind, brain. So we are literally deprived of kind of the natural feel-good chemicals that would happen naturally if we were outdoors moving our bodies a lot. So we basically are showing, I think, the deleterious effects of our lifestyle, where we're sitting on our asses indoors, disconnected from each other, you know, clicking on screens. And, you know, what passes for pleasure, I think, is more of kind of like that craving, wanting. It's exciting, but it's not really truly pleasure in the sense that it's not satisfying. So we're hobbled.
And you talked about, in the last segment, neural pathways. So one of the arguments here is that we have to kind of retrain our brains, right? Mm-hmm. We have to get turned on again, first of all, by life. Mm-hmm. And then we can think about our erotic potential. And to do that, we've got to sort of utilize the upper floors of the brain, right? And consciously kind of make decisions to embrace life more, right? To have more enthusiasm, to be invested in pleasure and in passion. And but tell me a little bit about how neural pathways get created and how they can also become like dirt roads that no one drives on anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, You know, great example is the connections between the genitals, the female genitals in particular, the clitoris and the vagina, and up to the brain. The more that you stimulate the genitals and the more you're experiencing sensation in the brain, it registers in something we call the general sensory cortex. And the more that you use it, those pathways, the one neuron talking to the other neuron, get stronger. And then therefore it becomes easier to experience sexual pleasure and orgasm and all of that. So we say in neuroscience, you know, the neurons that fire together, wire together, and that's really learning. Everything boils down to learning. The connections between the neurons are strengthened, and that's, in that case, embodied learning. So learning is really, really important. So when we want to get turned on by life again, what we need to really understand is what's out of balance in the core emotional systems. When we know that, for example, I know that I am panicky. Other people might learn that they tend to go to just plain old fear. And when I say panicky, I kind of panic and worry about relationships. I worry about getting things done. It's not fear in the moment. It's more of like I'm always thinking about what do I have to do to be okay. That's more of like the panic wiring. When people have imbalances there, when their defenses are on, what happens is they don't even realize that they're in that brain, that they're in they're in that mind. So people that are hot-headed, they kind of are quick to remember incidents when they're angered. People are anxious or worried about things that had happened and what could happen. It takes us out of the moment, and we're really not always able to just use the smarter parts of our minds to think ourselves out of those moods. What we need to do is to work with embodied manifestations of those defenses. And that's why I teach my colleagues about what we call affective balance therapies, where you actually work with the body and getting people attuned to what's happening in their body, like the sensations that go along with not just their thoughts, but the sensations in their body and their emotional weather. They can get a better handle on when is it really important for us to be anxious, or when do we need to breathe our way through the anxiety to calm the nervous system. And a lot of this is really learning how to operate our autonomic nervous systems to calm ourselves down so that we can be relaxed and resourceful enough to have new learning and harness our attention, Tristan. So we put our attention on not just the emotional weather, that'll hijack us, but what do we want to create? How do we want to be? How do we want to live our lives? So that lets us use the smarter parts of the brain to actually harness and work with the older portions of the brain. So they're kind of all working together. That's the point. Because when you are hijacked by the emotional systems, you know, you're not going to be able to think yourself out of, you know, whatever it is. Like, we all know what we should do. You know, socialize more, eat less, exercise more, da-da-da-da. Doesn't mean that we will do that because we get hijacked by, for example, the need to do our habits as we have because we find them somehow reinforcing, whether it's eating too much or, you know, kind of not moving our bodies. Whatever our habits are, those will continue because at the root of those habits are some kind of, you know, like some positive intention. People don't smoke cigarettes to get cancer, but they smoke cigarettes because the chemicals will soothe them. So right. We really need to understand how the brain mind works so we can work it better.
You know, this book for me is in a conversation with one of my favorite books of all time. So I'm really curious if you've read it. It's called Buddha's Brain. And it's written by a Buddhist therapist and a neuroscientist, two different people. And really, it was my first way to understand this neural pathway thing. And this is about sort of how to retrain your brain to bring sort of joy and happiness and positive experiences to the forefront and not default on always thinking about negative experiences.
Right.
Have you read that book?
I haven't, but I've heard of it and it sounds wonderful. And I would say that, you know, that we're going to be more likely to be effective at training the brain when we understand how the mind-brain works and how those emotional systems that are out of you know, balance can keep hijacking our attention to what's wrong, what's not okay, all of that sort of negativity. So yes, it's really at the end of the day about prioritizing pleasure and creating new, I'm sorry about that beep, about new experiences. Like, yes, we, you know, people are depressed, anxious, and all of that. But what's very effective is, in spite of that, helping people commit to prioritizing having new, more pleasurable experiences so that we can strengthen those pleasure connections and we can create the new habits so that they come more natural to us.
So sex is, it matters. It's very important. It's a centerpiece of your book. It's also very interesting because you talk about clients who come in for couples therapy and they present with a certain thing. He doesn't appreciate me. She's like mad all the time, whatever it is. And then you dig into their sex lives and you find that by working on their sex lives and making some breakthroughs around these emotions, other parts of their lives start to fall into place, start to get better. So this, of course, raises the question for me about, what about asexual people? If sex is this tool and this way to move through and embrace pleasure, what about people who don't desire sex at all?
Well, sex is only one way of experiencing pleasure. So I think if somebody is not interested in sex, there's a lot of individual differences in how people are wired like that. And if they enjoy connection, they enjoy themselves, they enjoy hobbies, and their emotional systems are working, that's fantastic. So, you know, for me, what we really need to understand is there's a huge amount of variation in terms of how people experience sex, whether they want it or don't, what turns them on, what doesn't turn them on. I talk about that in my erotic fingerprints part as a tool understanding our own sexual wiring. Some people are just what I call low sex drivers. They don't have much of a desire for sex. It may just be that's how they're wired. It may also be a combination of their experiences and their learning. So I think it's perfectly okay for somebody who's asexual to be asexual. I don't think you need to experience sex to have pleasure. I do think you need to experience pleasure in some way to have a life that's worth living.
I just want to say, you referenced someone I had on the show years ago and who I think is really brilliant and who no one ever talks about, which is Sandra Pertot, who's from Australia and wrote this book about mismatched libidos. You kind of reinterpret those libido types and add to it and add your sort of own spin on them. And I loved how you did that because I've always wanted someone to like take those tools. I just don't know why no one knows about her.
I don't know either. I had been asked to review her book for Contemporary Sexuality years ago. And I thought it was very, very good. I thought, gee, you know, just having a little idea of like that some people have this kind of natural propensity to like sex in a certain way would be like really good to know, like our sexual personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And some of it's biological, and I'm sure a lot of it's learning and so social stuff and experiential. And I do think that, you know, understanding our own libido types and those of our partners can help us navigate them. In fact, I have a fun little quiz on my website about that, you know.
Oh.
What's your love style? And then you can, you know a little bit about where you fall into it. And a lot of times we're a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. We can be a combination of several different types. Yeah.
And you know, when we have new relationship energy, everything's fine across all kinds of love styles because people are so ramped up on all of those brain chemicals. What happens is after that wears off, after new relationship energy wears off, and this is where I talk about in the desire curve part, that people experience the falling off of that intense, spontaneous sexual desire in ways that kind of fit their particular erotic fingerprint. So there's some people where the fall off of that spontaneous big energy from, you know, new relationship energy is very upsetting. For other people, they take it in their stride. For some people, there's not as much of a dip or difference in their sexual energy because, for example, if you think about someone who gets off on giving, as long as their partner's getting pleasure, their turn on is their partner's turn on. So as long as their partner's getting turned on, that's how they access their sexual energy. However, if their partner is no longer hot to trot and it doesn't get turned on so much because of the fall off from the peak level of desire, then they get upset. And the type I call the explorer, who they have very high levels of sexual desire and they like to explore, the falling off of new relationships energy is not so big because they are always exploring. So, and then I think we get all sorts of triggered by the changes in our partners after the new sexual relationship energy falls away. So I think by understanding and comparing, not to peak NRE, what people usually do is they, after the new relationship energy kind of phases out, like 18 to 36 months after you're in a relationship, people think back to the peak, and that's where they compare where they are post new relationship energy, and they look at it in comparison to the peak, the apex of the new relationship energy. They don't look back at their baseline sexual desire before the relationship.
Right. So
this is where educating ourselves on the natural, you know, waxing and waning of new relationship energy, and in combination with our own sexual personalities and the personality styles of our partners, can really give us, I think, the potential for lifelong, really great, you know, and I don't like to say great sex because I like good sex better. Great sex sounds like you have to strive for it. But, you know, sexual potential. There are people who have really actualized sexual potential across their life to the day they go, you know, they die. And I think these are the people who learn how to navigate this and have tools and skills for connecting, having difficult conversations, being able to be playful and curious and you know, enroll themselves and their partners and staying in the conversation about how can we have fun with these bodies? How can we play with each other? It doesn't have to look a certain way.
Well, I could talk to you for another 2 hours, we're going to have to say goodbye because we're out of time.
Well, do let your listeners know if any of them contact me and want to do, well, first of all, they can go to my website, askdrnan.com, doctor spelled out. They can book a free 15-minute consult with me. And if they identify themselves as finding me through you, through Sex Out Loud, I'll be very happy to give them my special half price session for their first full session.
Ooh, I love that idea.
And I work short time with short term, 4 to 6 sessions. That's it. Not that's it, but I usually
can't. Right.
People want to work with me longer over other things, that's fine. But I'm on it. Let's find out what you want to create. What are the tools that we have? Let's help you use your mind to kind of focus on how you get to be to create your new you, and let's get the party started.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And I really highly recommend the book is called Why Good Sex Matters: Understanding the Neuroscience of Pleasure for a Smarter, happier, and more purpose-filled life. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and it's available wherever you get your books. I especially encourage you to support independent bookstores or order through bookshop.org. Dr. Nan gave you her website. She's also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Ask Dr. Nan with the word doctor written out. Thank you so much, Nan.
Thanks for having me. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful rest of your day, week, month.
I love my team. Our senior producer, Raymond Johnson, has taken a hiatus, a much needed hiatus. So I love you, Raymond. My engineer and editor for today's show is Aaron A-Rod Rodriguez. Reunited. We are reunited once again. New episodes go up on the podcast platforms on Mondays. And you can find me across all social media at Tristan Taramino. Until next time.